The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Film Show, coming to you from the heart of festive London, where the snow has been falling and the Christmas lights are twinkling. On this week's show, our true love gives to us one instance of adultery in suburbia, one tale of murder in the city, one costumed calamity from 19th century France, and seven psychopaths butchering each other in the Hollywood Hills. There is no Christmas on this week's show. Coming up on a screen near you, Hugh Laurie steps out with the neighbour's daughter in The Oranges. Charlotte Rampling may just have committed a murder most foul in I, Anna. And Pete Doherty follows in the illustrious footsteps of Madonna and Sting by giving the acting lark a try in Confession of a Child of the Century. But let's kick off with Seven Psychopaths. It's the second feature from the Anglo-Irish dramatist Martin McDonagh, and it's about a writer called Martin who wants to write a film about seven psychopaths, but then, wouldn't you know it, gets in way over his head. Catherine Shaw sat down with the film's writer-director and its star, Colin Farrell.
What the hell happened?
Some punks jumped us.
Who are you?
Said they were looking for a little shih tzu. Then some other punk killed those punks. It's their blood. It's his puke.
You want to go to the bathroom, clean some of the blood and the puke off you?
In some ways, it's not a very flattering portrayal of a writer, you know. Not just the alcoholism, but there's a lot of lines about how he's a pussy. Do you think writers are fundamentally...
Pussies.
I prefer cowards. It's less pejorative. I don't know how even in the script or in the film, how the right. I think he comes across well just, but he comes across as a struggle.
It plays with the idea of strength, I suppose. I mean, you refer to someone as such an American... out of terms, you said the idea of someone being a pussy, but it plays with the notions of strength and what it is, how to define somebody's strength of character, and he's trying to turn the idea of violence in film on its head and create a film that is about peace and is about dialect and is about conversation that exists and comes to the surface through this maelstrom of really extreme violence. So he's trying to show one thing and indeed show why that one thing is the one path of life that shouldn't actually be followed, and only by showing it in its extremity can he show that it doesn't work.
I'm sick of all these stereotypical Hollywood psychopath movies. How about we change the title from Seven Psychopaths to the Seven Lesbians, who are all disabled and are really nice to everybody, and two of them are black.
The absurdity and the comedy and the violence and the thing, there's all that stuff which is really entertaining and wonderful, but beneath all that there are these profound questions of purpose and place on the planet and in relation to each other and existence and life after death and religion and the weight of guilt and burden of society, and all these things are so explored, which makes it not just an exercise in kind of, whoa, this is wacky and really interesting, never seen it before. It's for me anyway, and it can be kind of a significantly profound experience, you know, when exploring the story and stuff.
Which is cool.
Joining me now is the Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and films editor Catherine Shaw. Catherine, for Farrell there, it's a film that asks profound questions about existence and our place on the planet and religion and the burden of history. Did it ask those kind of questions of you?
It certainly tickled around them. I'm not sure it really sort of asked them. There's been quite a lot of hate for this film since... I mean, I saw it sort of a few months ago at Toronto and really, really liked it, actually, and have been slightly taken aback by all the hate for it. I think there's a lot to like it. I think I agree it's a lot less than the sum of its parts. There's a lot of little good things in it and a lot of little not so good things. But I think sort of as a whole it's quite a good package, and I think Colin Farrell is actually really, really good in it and much better at this kind of pathetic character than as a sort of straightforward leading man. I don't know. I think it did sort of throw up interesting questions. I think people are being a bit harsh on it. Maybe it's because In Bruges was such a sort of out of nowhere hit. I'm guessing you were one of the haters.
I wanted to like it, and I quite liked In Bruges. And it struck me as a kind of idiot's adolescent version of Charlie Kaufman's adaptation, which I think played with the same ideas, but with much more profundity, I think.
So I'm the idiot.
You're the idiot in this case. I thought it was played well. I thought that they all did a good job with the material that they were given, particularly Christopher Walken. And I always liked Tom Waits. But it just didn't add up to anything. It was just little kids wanting to be gangsters. Peter, are you in the hate camp?
I'm not a hater. I'm a sort of bemused disliker or disappointer. I looked at this poster image. I thought, wow, I guess these must be the seven psychopaths. I'm really looking forward to Abby Cornish as a psychopath. She's a brilliant actor. But the women are, not only are they sort of kept out of it, but there's a pathetic, self-referential laying off the bit where Christopher Walken's character reads his script and says, I really don't like the way you've treated women here. And that was so feeble.
You can't write women.
That's so feeble. I mean, really? All right, being brutal and misogynist, fine. Bring it on if you want to be brutal, but don't lay off the bat with this pathetic, have your cake and eat it.
Yeah, it's that sort of nudge and wink that you think it doesn't actually change what the material is.
I'm part of the damaged generation that wrote for the Modern Review in the 1990s. If this came out in the 1990s, we would probably have put it on the cover and thought it was absolutely great. It reminded me, as a not incompetent pastiche of Tarantino and Roger Avery and Shane Black and those people who did this sort of thing. Yeah. It didn't remind me very much of Charlie Kaufman, actually. More of the Tarantino Avery kind of Pulp Fiction style. And in the first, like all these films, the first 20 minutes where all his ideas, all his gags are, is absolutely great. But then it loses the plot, basically. It just doesn't become very interesting as a plot. And the final shootout, it's just sort of boring, really. And I don't say that with any sort of sense of hate, because I'm a big fan of Martin McDonagh. I was not just in Bruges, but of his stage plays, which are so great and so distinctive. Mm. Usually every line of his work is utterly distinctive and brilliant. But this looks like it could have been written by somebody else. And however much I wanted to love it, I've had this lined up as a pre-Christmas treat. Mm. I just, after a while, I thought it was just a bit, you know, quite aside from its meaning, I've just found it a little bit boring.
You know what I think the movie should be? The first half should be like a perfect setup for an out-and-out revenge flick.
Yeah.
Violence, guns, all the usual bullshit, and then, I don't know, man, it's the lead characters should just walk away. They should just drive off into the desert and pitch a tent somewhere and just talk for the rest of the friggin' movie. No shootouts, no payoffs, just human beings talking.
Time now to hop like Tom Waits's rabbit from the West Coast to the East, and The Oranges, a New Jersey comedy about two everyday suburban families who will soon very sadly be at war.
You could say life in The Oranges is dependable.
I'm going out.
Wow, don't you look nice.
Mom, give me some room.
That is until what happened happened.
Kathy.
Mom.
Oh my God.
Kathy.
I'm gonna throw up.
Hugh Laurie lives in a house in West Orange, New Jersey, with his wife Catherine Keener and daughter Alia Shawkat. Nearby, there is another house, inhabited by Alison Janney, Oliver Platt, and their daughter Leighton Meester. But when Laurie gets together with Meester, he puts a plague on both their houses. Though happily, it is a plague of comedy.
Can't we just be normal?
What's normal? I don't do this. I am not that guy.
Terry, you want to go? You and me? Make out in the back? Right now, let's go. Let's do it.
Peter, Hugh Laurie's had this astonishing second act of his career on American TV, but is he a movie star on the basis of this?
I'm not sure that he's not a movie star. He does a kind of house light in this, basically. He does the kind of rumpled, lovable, kind of slightly maverick-y turn, which is sort of played nicer. It's a strange film. It has that sort of American Beauty vibe of a weird transgressive thing happening in suburbia and the older man fancying and getting it on with a younger woman. And part of me thinks that's great. At least it's got the courage of its convictions and, you know, they actually do it. But it weirdly skirts around how transgressive and how creepy that actually is, because it's not simply an older man and a younger woman, because they're both over 21, they're both adults, but he has presumably known her since she was a little girl, since she was a baby. And the film tries to skirt around that by having her being away for 5 years. She's been away for 5 years,
and she's
time,
come back all
and
woman.
And she's come back all grown up.
There's a telltale lack of chemistry as well between...
Yes, that is a problem, I think, in a film like this, which rather hinges on that. And it's strange about Hugh Laurie, because he's so sort of good and clever and smart and so on. And yet, what a terrible eye for scripts he's got. You know, this and maybe Baby, you know, was his last live action lead.
Was that long ago?
It was a long time ago. And he, you know, not long enough, really. And, you know, Mr. Pip, which is his new one, is equally not great. Which is strange because he's so kind of likeable. And also he's kind of attractive. And yet in this, you know, just it doesn't fizz at all, and it's not at all believable. Yeah. And Hugh Laurie is so uncreepy as a person, although in that picture he looks a little bit creepy.
He looks a little bit creepy, yes. He looks a bit dextery in that.
Yeah.
I guess at heart it's billed as a comedy. Is it funny?
It's kind of dramedy funny. What can I tell you? It's not, in other words, no, it's not funny at all. It's kind of sort of knowing and cute. That there aren't any thigh-slapping lines in it, not for me, no. I mean, Seven Psychopaths had more laughs in it, to be absolutely fair to both films.
Hooray, there we go. A little bit of praise, finally.
A little bit of praise already.
Nice move on the Christmas card.
Thank you.
Oh, good God.
Another big leap of geography now, all the way back to London, that boulevard of broken dreams, gnawing loneliness, and possible murder. This, it transpires, is the unhappy hunting ground of I, Anna.
This is your first time.
Is it obvious? Do you have any tips for me?
The lonely hearts of London are pointed towards tragedy and murder in Barnaby Southcote's jittery film noir. Charlotte Rampling plays 50-something Anna, who wakes up with a broken wrist, a bloodied corpse at her side, and no memory of what actually went on. Gabriel Byrne and Eddie Marsan are the cops called in to clear up the mystery.
And then there's the slow dance.
Well, what's the slow dance?
It's supposed to help us overcome our inhibitions.
Catherine, this film was directed by Charlotte Rampling's son, Barnaby Southcote. He really puts his mum through hell here, doesn't he?
He does, and also through, you know, talking of creepy in terms of the oranges. I mean, there's a lot of not just kind of scenes of her in the bath, but also her putting on a frock and men going, looking good, or just turning round and people going, "Whoa, great calves." I mean, they don't say that, although the dialogue isn't its strongest
Freud
point.
Would have a field day.
but, you know, this isn't actually that bad. It's kind of all right. It looks good. Dialogue's not great. The plot's, you know. But yeah, I mean, I thought there was quite a lot to like here. And, you know, he's given his mum a juicy role. And she's grabbed it and sucked it dry.
Like an orange.
Like an orange, yes. didn't you think?
Yeah, I thought it had a fantastic sense of this kind of emptied out nocturnal London and the brutalist architecture. A lot of it's set around the Barbican. Mm. And just that sense of the alien city. And he's a good visual director in that. I like the way that he has all the characters kind of pinched by door frames or curtains and everything, this sense that they're all slightly kind of trapped and scratching at each other. And the great Richard Hawley soundtrack as well. Peter, did it convince you?
Partly, yes. And I think it didn't quite come together at the end, but I thought there was lots to like and to admire in it. Like you, I really liked his eye for the Barbican complex and how that, so far from being a smart upmarket area, it's brutal and grim and horrible and sort of Berlin nightmare, this place. I like Eddie Marsan in it. There's some good casting of Gabriel Byrne as the troubled DCI and his long-suffering junior, Eddie Marsan. Some good stuff between the pair of them. I've got to admit, the progressive revelation of her secret sort of made my heart sink when I realised what arena we had stumbled into, to be honest with you.
Without giving too much away.
Without giving too much
just
away.
Just back from Vietnam.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. She's got this huge canister of napalm in the box room. I wasn't a massive fan of the way the narrative played out. But it's certainly, he's a very competent director. As I say, he's worked very extensively in television. And it's very interesting that he's working with his mother. And that gives the whole thing an interesting new dimension. I've got to be quite honest, I don't think it quite came together at the end. But there's lots of interesting stuff. And I like the way that her job is this salesperson at Peter Jones.
Yeah.
And she sort of gets very sort of tired and lies down on
lies
the bed.
Down on the bed.
She's very, because she does look like a very good sort of John Lewis sales associate. So I thought that was a nice touch.
And the security guard says, "You're right,
Anna." You're right, Anna. Of course I'm not. All right, don't be ridiculous. I've got this terrible noir secret.
I was told that a woman's greatest failing is not to want children.
first date faux pas. Keep it light.
I started it.
We end with Confession of a Child of the Century, a tale of romance and philosophy in 1830s France, in which the former Libertines frontman Pete Doherty plays quite the dandy. If he's not shooting himself by the end of this film, you might be.
Whatever suffering passion may cause, one must not compare life sorrows with those of death.
1830s France is awash with top hats, chaise longues, philosophical musings and romantic misunderstandings. Sylvie Verhaeghe's powdered poodle of a drama sends Pete Doherty wafting listlessly from Lily Cole to a goat to sexy Charlotte Gainsbourg, and only the goat emerges with its dignity intact.
Stop it!
You've won my friendship. I wish you had the strength to keep yours for me.
Peter, we've had Sting in Dune, Mick Jagger in Free Jack, and now we can add another name to the list.
Yes, we can. I mean, there is an honourable tradition of pop stars being bloody awful in films. Even the great David Bowie himself is sort of always a bit bloody awful, but he kind of carries it off because he's David Bowie. And maybe there is a fan base large enough to apply the kind of David Bowie get out of jail free card to Pete Doherty. When I watched this, I came out thinking, well, you know what? Pete Doherty's sort of not bad, considering he's terrible. And then I realised, wait, if I didn't know who he was, I would be coming out thinking, what on earth is going on? Who is that terrible bloke? That's outrageous. So, I mean, he is a bit terrible. He looks like he's been agonisingly coached through every line reading, every take that's used. There must be about 99 other takes that they had to take. No, stop. OK, first positions. OK, Pete, let's try that again.
Yeah, he looks exhausted.
Yeah, he just looks, saying, OK, yeah, all right, Pete, let's go again. Remember? We go, we walk forward, that's it, fine. Don't hit the light. Okay, try it. Okay, take 37. Go, you know, it did look a lot like that to me. But, and Charlotte Gainsbourg, who is a trooper. I mean, she just is a trooper. She doesn't behave in any way as if she's doing anything other
than... But
she's
carrying him, she's like holding him up in the ring,
isn't
she? She does
look, she looks like his mum. She looks like he's in a nativity play and she's his mum or his teacher, desperately trying to keep him together. It's a very odd film. It's a curious... I've seen worse. We've seen worse actors, professional actors, but not
who,
many.
Peter? Who?
I must say, the great Vincent Gallo himself has sometimes challenged Pete Doherty for willfully awful acting. I mean, it's strange. There's something so smug about his saying, look, I'm playing a libertine. And that's because, you'll never guess, I was in a band called The Libertine. But it's not just that. I sort of am a libertine in my real life too. And there's that kind of triple-decker of annoyingness that just, oh dear, no, it's very odd.
Catherine, there's a noble tradition, though, of using non-professional actors in films, and it can give great authority and integrity to the film. But here he just seems so horribly self-conscious and so concerned with his own image that it just kills it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a difference between willfully appalling acting and what Pete Doherty is doing here, which is just... I can't imagine it's willful. I mean, it's just... I remember seeing this at Cannes, and in the same way that I was keen for people to see Seven Psychopaths because I thought, oh, they might like this, I thought, oh, I can't wait for people to see this because bloody hell. It's like an amazing pudding that you want people to eat with you. It is just awful. I mean, I can't remember when I last saw such a bad film, really. And it doesn't make
any... So it's not just Doherty, then?
No, I think that's the thing. And it's sort of the thing is that the camera kind of jiggles with him in that sweaty, dreadful way. So that doesn't help at all. And the plot makes no sense. I mean, you know, it's this incredibly debauched society where everybody's orgying away all the time, like here. But the thing is that he's seeing Lily Cole's character. She does footsie under the table
with
somebody.
It's disgusting.
Apparently that's a total deal breaker.
That is totally outrageous.
You're completely dumped. So, you know, throughout there's all these insane bits and then there's this goat.
But the goat is like a catalyst for him and Charlotte Gainsbourg
getting
together.
It's Cupid the goat.
Cupid the goat.
Yeah, they meet when... What happens? They're just walking and
they're
there's a goat.
They're walking in the forest. And
that's it.
You know, you see a goat and you start thinking of love.
Yes.
We're going to be late.
I had lived only through that woman. To doubt her was to doubt all.
curse her, to renounce all, to lose her, to destroy all.
Pete Doherty, living the dream in Confession of a Child of the Century. And after that, there's nowhere else to go, nothing more to say. My thanks, as ever, to Catherine Short and Peter Bradshaw. Thanks to you for watching. We're now off to drink some laudanum or something, but we'll be back next week. See you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.